Live from WNUR News, I'm Daniel Williams. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. It's Wednesday, May 24th. Tonight on WNUR News, a look into the Women's Center's series on reproductive justice. Reporter Kobe Petishman explores Planet Dillo, Northwestern's yearly music festival. And Lucia Barnum has a story of a family-owned bike shop disrupting Evanston's biking industry. Those stories coming up tonight on WNUR News at 6. Thanks for tuning in. Following debates about abortion across the country, the Women's Center at Northwestern University designed a four-part series about reproductive justice. The latest event in their series occurred a couple weeks ago on May 4th and featured Northwestern alumni as panelists. Contributing reporter Hannah Cole has more.
It concluded its reproductive justice series with a discussion about how to move from campus to community-based organizing. Sarah Brown is the director of the Women's Center and worked with the Gender and Sexuality Studies Program, or GSS, on the event.
GSS and the Women's Center have been partnering to bring speakers in to help people sort of know what's going on in the national landscape, to understand the history of abortion, all of these different aspects that we think people are really hungry for.
Rather than solely focusing on a person's right to abortion, a reproductive justice framework champions the right to have a child, the right to not have a child, and the right to raise one's child in a safe and healthy environment. However, this activism takes preparation.
There's a set of skills that they would need in order to really get involved in that work. And we don't like to take for granted that people just know how to wake up one day and become an activist for reproductive justice.
So the Women's Center got to work with sessions on reproductive justice, direct action, and healing justice. The final event focuses on how to organize one's community.
We have really carefully, along with our students, planned out these four sessions as a way of building your knowledge toward getting involved.
Some of the speakers for the event included Northwestern alumni currently involved in community organizing and activist work, such as CESPE alum Eliza Gonring.
I was at Northwestern. One of my political homes was through an organization that was like, their home base was in the Women's Center.
This motivated them to return to Northwestern for the event.
So it also, I feel like, feels important for me to work with the Women's Center on Northwestern's campus.
Eliza does not work explicitly with reproductive justice. Instead, they work for the Prison and Neighborhood Arts and Education Project, or PNAP, which connects teachers and artists to incarcerated people. However, their work on campus and their current job lends well to the event's topic.
When I was in college, it kind of felt weird that I think most of my energy outside of the classroom was being focused on organizing. And I think a lot of people were like, how are you going to translate that into a job? And I did. And it's the reason I got a job.
Eliza hopes students walked away after the event feeling motivated to pursue activist work in fields like reproductive justice, even if community-based organizing isn't the most standard route.
You don't really need to like go down a traditional path. You don't have to compromise on what your interests are if you also want to put bread on the table.
And students certainly appreciated the advice, especially when the speakers discussed taking care of one's mental health during activist work, which can often be emotionally taxing. CESPE sophomore Alicia Tai wanted to learn more about how to become involved in organizing while balancing her own mental health.
I came when we were talking about boundaries. I think that's a really, really important conversation.
Other students like Weinberg Jr. Andy Tipton just wanted to learn more about reproductive justice specifically.
I came to this event because I'm part of NU Feminist and I feel like it's kind of my responsibility to learn more about reproductive justice.
While the event featured important conversations about current issues, the most exciting part for many of the attendees, including speaker Eliza Gonring, the bonfire and s'mores.
I love bonfires. I just love coming home and like your clothes smell like smoke.
Participants enjoyed fun conversations in addition to their serious social organizing. And Sarah Brown, the Women's Center director, said the bonfire wasn't just for show. It also contributed to the shared community feeling.
There's a sense of community and fun even, and joy that we're bringing into the practice of gathering, even to talk about things that are really hard. feel like our, as the marshmallow count goes down, that's like a sign that things are working.
Yeah, I'm a landlord, an artist, and a bird worker.
Hannah Cole, Medill.
Reporter Kobe Petitman is going to explore Planet Dillo, Northwestern's yearly music festival, and Lucia Barnum has a story of a family-owned bike shop disrupting Evanston's biking industry. Next, Kobe Petitman's exploration of Planet Dillo.
Congregated on the Lakeville on Saturday for Dillo Day, the largest student-run festival in the nation. This space-themed iteration marked the 51st time that the event has been held, and the culmination of a tumultuous year of work by student org Mayfest Productions. For attendees like CESPE freshman Emma Manley, it's a key Northwestern institution.
I feel like it's just like one of those Northwestern things you gotta do.
Beenan freshman Maddie Zuckerman and Henry Herbert echo the same.
Yeah. Fun! It means fun! It means
Dillo
family!
Means freedom! Dillo means real Northwestern.
The variety of performers included both student groups and mainstream artists, including rapper and headliner Offset.
We are enjoying Muse, etc. Our favorite band on campus.
We are celebrating.
Our friends are in it, Jeremy Birkin and Alex Noiser.
Zuckerman, as well as Weinberg freshman Miles Azuma Hall and Medill freshman Beatrice Villaflor, were excited for the entire lineup.
I'm excited to see Rini,
so
a Filipino artist. It's going to be really good.
I'm excited to see Kristen Maroney.
It wasn't just Northwestern students, though. University of Chicago junior Mitch Robson was excited to attend Dillo for the first time this year.
I'd never been. I'd heard great things about it. I like Offset.
Several food vendors came to the Lakeville for the day, including an ice cream cart, hot dog stand, and five food trucks, offering everything from barbecue to grilled cheese to empanadas and fried chicken. Graduating Weinberg senior Spencer Page was excited to take advantage.
You know, the food trucks were really nice. Got some brisket mac bowl from Soul and Smoke, and then a lot of food from Harold's. That was sick.
For many, it was a day to unwind amidst the intensity of their classes.
Dillo means a moment of release from the stress of studying for finals.
Yes.
At the end of the year.
I mean, like, low-key, I have something due tomorrow at noon, so that's rough.
Yeah, I got finals week a week earlier than, you know, Northwestern kids, so I got it this coming week, so I'm just trying to have some fun before it's, you know, grind time tomorrow.
Students like Paige also see it as a unique opportunity for the Northwestern community and the broader people of Evanston to come together.
I mean, I think Dillo's cool because I don't really think there's anything else like it anywhere in general. It's pretty rare, I feel, to see, like, that many people, like, in the streets of Evanston having fun. Like, I walked down Maple Ave today and just people are out. Even people who aren't affiliated with the university, just local residents are out. And I think that's a good time in general.
Retail vendors included Crossroads, a clothing exchange in downtown Evanston that sold apparel from their pop-up stand on the Lakeville.
Yeah, it's nice to see everyone out. Everyone's having so much fun, and I love the outfits with the alien theme.
Yeah, the style's definitely great. I think having this view also is amazing. So props to whoever set this up. Great job, Northwestern.
Soon-to-be-inaugurated Northwestern President Michael Schill was similarly thrilled to see the festival unfold.
I just love watching all the students and folks in town join together in something that is really exciting and fun. I mean, the students are doing an amazing job. They are, you know, they organize everything from the security to the food to the production. I mean, it really makes me proud to see all the great work that they've done.
It's a process that is equally exhilarating for the student organizers themselves, such as junior student Kat Duncan.
Yeah, so I am one of the co-heads of promotions, and the promotion committee basically designs and distributes all of the promotional and marketing materials for Dillo Day.
Setting up Dillo was no simple task. Mayfest Productions is an entirely student-run organization and is tasked with planning every aspect of the event. In an open letter published in the Daily Northwestern, Mayfest said that the funding they received in 2023 from the Northwestern administration had dramatically declined despite increasing operating costs.
So building on improvements we wanted to make, but with a more limited budget, was a very difficult part of it. And then also being able to get a lineup that's representative of what the caliber of Dillo Day people have come to expect.
But on the big day, all of the stress and hard work paid off.
Tia Carine is one of my favorite artists and someone I was really excited to see on the lineup. And after her set, she just stayed in the pit the whole time because she was so interested in like watching all the other artists. And it's just such a cool thing where the artists at the festival are such a big fan of like the festival itself and everyone else there that they like voluntarily stay and watch it, and you get to stand with them and like see this experience. Being Offset interact with like all the students was so cool. And after the show, you know, he drove past on his golf cart and he smiled at all of us. It was just very sweet, and we all felt very seen.
For WNUR News, I'm Kobe Potishman.
Chicago is known for its strong biking infrastructure and community, an industry dominated by white men. A small, family-owned bike shop run out of an Evanston garage is trying to change that. Contributing reporter Lucia Barnum has more.
Suburban Seward Street in southwest Evanston, the last thing you'd expect to find would be a bike shop. But if you go down the back alley behind the row of houses, you'll find a two-car garage full of about a dozen bikes. The back wall is hidden by tall metal racks, completely full with boxes of tire tubes and used bike parts. A simple wooden workbench sits by the entrance. Above it hangs a set of tools, all painted blue, complete with wrenches and screwdrivers of every size.
Let's see, eventually I'd like to have a sign. Just like a tiny little square that has that my logo with the moon and the tire.
That's Flowers Luna. They live in the building upstairs. And if you ask them what their title is, they'll say,
I am a community bike mechanic.
Luna Alley is the first queer and person of color-owned bike shop in Evanston. Flowers Luna is a founder, owner, and sole mechanic. Mechanics is well known to be a male-dominated industry. And a recent report from USA Cycling revealed that nearly 4 out of 5 of its members are white. These statistics mean that biking can be hard to access for women, queer people, and people of color. Finding a welcoming bike shop is often the most challenging part.
It's necessary. I think it's necessary to feel, especially in these days, you know, to be able to say, like, come as you are, and the only thing you have to worry about is just your bike leaving here with a little bit of dust, and that's it, right?
Luna was born and raised in Little Village, near the south side of Chicago. They said they've liked riding bikes since they were a little kid, and they've always been comfortable working with their hands.
Whether that was like with art, I used to make jewelry when I was in high school.
They graduated from DePaul in 2005. During their senior year, they started to get more into biking.
Yeah, I mean, like any person that rides a bike will tell you, you have to know a little bit about the mechanics of what's happening with your shifters, you know, like what is that tension? Where is that happening?
In order to keep their own bike in working condition, they looked up YouTube videos to learn the basics of bike mechanics. Eventually, they started fixing their friends' bikes, too, out of their college dorm room. They said it came naturally.
It was a nice progression to being a rider, to being like, okay, this isn't rocket science.
After graduation, they started working at the Recyclery, a nonprofit bike shop in Rogers Park. They taught classes on how to completely take apart and put together your bike in English and Spanish. The Recyclery has many programs designed to help make cycling more accessible. They mostly donate refurbished bicycles. They also allow volunteers to earn a bike, helmet, and lock by working for a certain number of hours per month.
It was always nice to not have a dollar attached to everything that we did when folks came in to either want to learn mechanics or want to get a free bicycle, and we never sort of like forced on either end.
Olivia Sotos is a sophomore at Northwestern. She uses her bike to commute to classes and ride with the club triathlon team.
It's a more accessible form of transportation than a lot of other forms are, even though like it is a little bit physically demanding. And I think if there was a stronger biking community, that would be really great.
When she thinks of her ideal bike shop, she thinks of a place with mechanics she could become friends with. She would want the service to be fast and inexpensive. And most of all, she hopes to find a shop that can help her become a more self-sufficient biker.
It would be really cool if they would tell you what they were doing to your bike and help you like understand the mechanics of your bike so you can repair yourself if you needed to.
Soto said it's rare to find a bike shop that values teaching and flexible pricing. But that's how Luna learned to run their classes at the Recyclery. And it's the way they run their shop today. They always offer customers a choice between new and used parts if they want to save money. When customers come in with questions, They work with them to learn more about their bike as they work. Laura Harris-Faree has been one of Luna's customers since the fall. They moved with their wife to Chicago from Seattle about a year and a half ago. Their bikes needed to be set up so that their 18-month-old daughter could ride along with them.
You know, even adding like the child seat on, they did that for me and helped me learn like how to ride with the seat on there, and you know, did like free tune-ups and adjustments as we got used to it.
Harris-Faree said it was important to them to find a queer, POC-owned business to work on their bikes, in part because it's important to them to support all minority-owned businesses, but also because they wanted the experience to feel affirming and supportive.
And I've also just found a better experience with them, honestly, right? Like, my family is acknowledged and there's no, like, weird questions about what my family looks like.
The bike shops they visited in Seattle were more corporate and traditional. They said they felt judged by the people who worked there and the community in general.
Previous experiences, it was just assumed that I didn't know what I was doing with my bike, right? Or that I didn't know how to truly ride it.
But their experience at Luna Alley was completely different from the very beginning.
I'm always listened to, and like they affirm what I'm saying, or you know, they trust what I'm saying. It's no, some like bro-y vibes that you get elsewhere.
I do identify as a queer non-binary person.
Luna said they usually have about 15 bikes in their garage at a time during peak bike season. In the 3 years since they've opened, they've served around 420 customers.
For just me, I feel like that's cool. I'm pretty proud of that.
And they said about half of those customers are queer.
And I don't think that's by mistake. I don't think, like, Southwest Evanston is this, like, queer trans non-binary hub.
They said many of their customers feel the way Harris-Faree does. It's rare to find a bike mechanic who's open to answering questions, and it's rare to find a queer person of color to fix your bike at all. Luna is optimistic that their bike shop will keep growing. But in the meantime, they're excited to continue their mission of fostering a welcoming, self-sufficient biking community.
This is more than just like a job or a business, because, you know, they might walk away feeling, you know, like they have a little bit of, you know, being affirmed.
Lucia Barnum, Medill.
Welcome back to WNUR News. It's 6:19 p.m. Central Time. Now time for our weekly sports report, a glance at spring season's wrapping up and postseason action for our Cats.
Hi, I'm Amelia Donhauser. Here's your NU sports report for this week. Over the weekend, the Cats captured their second straight NCAA regional title against Miami University at the Jay in Evanston. They first took down Kentucky on Saturday to advance to the regional final against Miami, Ohio. And they took down Miami, Ohio in a thrilling 5-4 win on Sunday afternoon. Pitcher Lauren Boyd started for the Cats as she had a career high, tying 9 strikeouts in 3.2 innings. The dominant Danielle Williams got out of a bases-loaded no-out jam in the 7th to secure her 22nd win of the season. Offensively, the Cats fell behind 2-0 to the Red Hawks before graduate student Nikki Cochran had a game-tying 2-run home run in the 4th inning. The Cats took the lead on graduate student Jordan Rudd's RBI single in the top of the 5th. Although the Redhawks retook the lead shortly in the 5th, Rudd had a game-winning RBI double in the top of the 7th. On the weekend, Rudd hit 600 with a home run, 2 doubles, and 4 RBIs. The Cats will go to Tuscaloosa Super Regional on Friday to take on number 5 Alabama at 7 p.m. Central Time as they seek their second straight College World Series appearance. Meanwhile, for baseball, coming off an exciting win at Wrigley against Notre Dame, the Cats hosted the Iowa Hawkeyes for a 3-game series for their regular season finale. In Game 1, the Hawkeyes rolled the Cats, beating them 15-3 at Miller Park in Evanston. But the Cats tied the series in Game 2, beating the Hawkeyes 6-4. Senior pitcher Jack Dyke got the win as he gave up 2 runs and 1 earned run for the Cats, and junior Ben Grable got his second save of the season in 1.2 innings of work. The Hawkeyes scored first in the top of the 1st off an RBI ground out, but the Cats answered immediately with an RBI in the bottom of the 1st. Offensively, home runs by Griffin Arnone, Owen McAlfatrick, and Alex Colarco powered the Cats to the win. Colarco recorded 2 other RBIs on the day. The Cats couldn't close out the series on Saturday as the offense went quiet in a 0-10 loss. They will end the disappointing regular season with a tough 10-40 overall record and a 4-10 record in the Big Ten.
On Thursday, the 19-1 number one ranked Cats will take on number 5 Denver in Cary, North Carolina in the semifinals of the NCAA tournament. This is the Cats' 4th consecutive Final Four appearance, and they are looking for their first NCAA championship since 2012. Led by the dominant AZ Skane and Aaron Koikendall, the Cats are well-positioned to make a run at the chip. Finally, in women's golf, the 15th ranked Cats concluded their season in the 3rd round of the NCAA championship at the Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona. It was their 8th appearance since 2013. They finished the tournament 28 above par. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Amelia Donhauser, WNUR News.
A look at the weather for tonight. Tonight is partly cloudy with a low of 54. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy as well with a high of 58. Taking a look into the headlines, NU Libraries announced Brew Coffee Lab in Main Library would be closing effective Friday. The coffee shop first opened in October 2022, and the university is already searching for a replacement for the space. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced his candidacy for president, joining an already crowded Republican primary. The announcement came in a conversation with Elon Musk on Twitter and was delayed by more than 20 minutes due to a technical malfunction. Nearly 400,000 people listened to the controversial politician's announcement. Tina Turner, the iconic singer, died today at age 83. Known as the Queen of Rock and Roll, she passed after a long illness in her home near Zurich, Switzerland. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news and updates, reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNUR.news. That's WNUR.news. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our producer today is Amelia Donhauser, and our reporters are Hannah Cole, Kobe Fitzman, and Lucia Barnum. From all of us here at WNUR News, thanks for listening. I'm Daniel Gross. Catch our next newscast on Friday, May 26th at 6 p.m. Now back to scheduled programs.